This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Joining us for this new edition of From the Woods, Kentucky. I'm Renee Williams, along with my co-host, Laura Lodka. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Ellen Crocker and Abe Nielsen. Dr. Crocker is a member of the Forestry Extension Team in the Forestry Department of Natural Resources, and she specializes in forest health issues and also works with the Forest Health Center that's housed at UK. And we also have Abe. He is a forest health specialist with the Kentucky Division of Forestry, and he manages the Forest Health Program for the state of Kentucky. So welcome both of you today. We really appreciate y'all coming on the show.
Yeah. Thank you for having us on.
Yes,
sure.
Thank you.
Sure. So I'm going to start with Ellen. Ellen, if you can tell us a little bit about your background and what is the Forest Health Center?
Wonderful. So I work with the Forest Health Research and Education Center that you mentioned, and this is a collaborative center that just started based here at the University of Kentucky a few years ago, and it's a collaboration with the U.S. Forest Service, the University of Kentucky Department of Forestry and Natural Resources, and Kentucky Division of Forestry. And the mission of this center is to advance conservation and restoration of forested ecosystems, doing this by integrating genetics-based biological research, social sciences research, and education and outreach. So I've been leading a lot of the education and outreach efforts, and through this role I've also been involved in research collaborations with biological and social scientists, doing all sorts of different things, from research on different forest pathogens and diseases to citizen science related work, such as the TreeSnap mobile app. So it's a really exciting new center that's based here, hopefully making some big progress with regard to forest health.
So what got you interested in forest health and the profession?
Well, I've always loved the outdoors. When I was a kid, I would much rather be playing with insects and catching snakes than playing video games or inside with dolls. So when I finished my undergraduate degree in biology, I was lucky enough to land a research job in a lab that specialized in forest pathology, which at the time, I'll admit, I didn't know a lot about. But it's the study of the diseases of trees. And at the time, there was a major invasive disease that was affecting trees in California called sudden oak death. It was wiping out trees, causing ecological problems, as well as, you know, a serious issue for landowners in that area. And so I worked at UC Berkeley doing research and also extension work, working with the public about this tree disease. And I loved that, and that's what made me kind of want to go into this area. So I got a PhD in plant pathology, which is the study of plant diseases, and I worked looking at invasive plant species and their soil microbes. So is there some way that these pathogens are contributing to the success of invasives? And invasives are non-native species that are just taking over, out-competing natives, crowding them out, having negative ecological impacts, negative economic impacts. So trying to understand, do pathogens play a role in that? So that's kind of some of the background on why I love what I do and why I do what I do. And then I felt really lucky to come here to UK to be looking at forest health, because I think our extension team really does a great job of connecting to the public and making a positive impact in our state.
Great. Thank you. Now, Abe, thank you for coming into the studio today, and you're a forest health specialist with the Kentucky Division of Forestry. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do with the Kentucky Division of Forestry?
Yeah, certainly. So I manage the forest health program within the Division of Forestry, and in that work, I work with a couple of different groups of people. So mainly, I work with our foresters and landowners to make sure that they're kind of up to date with what forest health issues we're seeing across the state. So a lot of that is kind of the training that I put on for them to make sure if we have any new disease or plants or insects kind of popping up in the state so that they're familiar with what we've got going on and how they can manage their forests appropriately. Besides that, I'm also in charge of monitoring for any of our forest health issues across the state. So I do roadside surveys where I get out if we have a report of maybe some trees browning or some trees dying off, I'll get out into the field to take a look to see what might be causing it. And I also get up in plains and do some aerial survey work of the different health issues that we see. And then I usually take that information and I work with our partners, many of which are here at UK, to get that information out so that our extension agents and also our landowners are familiar with what health threats we have in the state.
Okay, great. And can you tell us a little bit how you got involved in forest health and what attracted you to the kind of forestry and natural resource profession?
Yeah, so I've had an interesting journey. I began with an environmental science degree in undergrad at West Virginia Wesleyan. And from there, that was such a broad topic, I didn't really know what direction I wanted to go. But in my senior year there, I took a GIS course and really got interested in some forest systems and looking to see how the GIS can help out those fields. And from that, I ended up coming here to the University of Kentucky for my master's degree, and I was working with bush honeysuckle with Dr. Songlin Fay at that time. So that was kind of my first introduction to the world of forest health was by the component of invasive plants. So invasive plants are just one minor component of forest health. There's a lot more the insects and diseases. And I was fortunate enough that after getting my master's degree here at UK, I got a position with Dr. Risky Kinney, who works in the Department of Entomology, and I was worked in her forest entomology research lab. During my time there working with Dr. Risky Kinney, I was working with emerald ash borer and hemlock woolly adelgid, which are two of our big name exotic insects that we're going to discuss a little bit more today. So that was kind of my second introduction into the world of forest health. And from that point forward, I knew I was, I pretty much fell in love with Kentucky's forest when I moved here and knew that this was the profession for me.
Great. Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming in today.
All right. So our main topic today is forest health. So we would like to know, why is forest health important and why should our listeners care about forest health and why should it be important to them?
So I think maybe one of the ways to start answering that question would be talking about what forest health is in general, mm-hmm. because it's a tricky term. And I think a lot of people kind of, when they walk around in a wood or a forest, that they appreciate it and they love it. But trying to define whether or not it's healthy and how healthy it is hard. And so I guess one way to start thinking about that would be thinking about what are the common characteristics of healthy forests. So if you were to close your eyes and envision the most healthy, vibrant woodland or forest you can, they tend to have some common features. So first off, the canopy is going to be full and healthy. The branches and the leaves are going to be doing very well. You're going to have vigorous native plant species here in Kentucky, lots of different tree species, the different plants and animals that they support. You might have not just different species, but different age classes. So you're going to have, the giants that are forming what you think of as the forest, shading things out, the dominant trees. You're going to have other trees that are competing with them, vying with them for that role. You'll have trees in the understory that are, filling in gaps in the canopy, seedlings that are just coming up. This real diversity across the landscape of species and how they, their role, their age, potential for regeneration and longevity of that forest. So it's sustainable. It's going to continue. So it's a space that's thriving. So that's kind of how I tend to think of healthy forests. And then on the other hand, sites that are unhealthy, woodlands that are unhealthy, maybe they're going to have really high tree death, high mortality. So something's gone in there and killed a lot of trees, or those trees have aged out and gotten too old. There's big canopy openings resulting from that. Maybe you have an area that's dominated by invasive species that are those invasive plants that we are mentioning that really are crowding out the natives and preventing them from thriving. So forest health itself is actually pretty tough to define, but those are some tools that I think, you know, sound familiar and seem familiar in our minds and help us understand that. I think one of the reasons why forest health is so difficult to define is that it varies depending on where you are and what you want. So from one area to another, from Western Kentucky to Eastern Kentucky, what is a healthy forest is gonna differ. And then not to mention that depending on who owns that area, what they want from their property might be really different. So 88% of our forested areas in Kentucky are privately owned. Every one of those private landowners probably has a different vision for what they want from their woodland. But whether it's someone who wants to cultivate an old growth forest that may have a lot of dead and dying trees that are, you know, older but still providing really beneficial services, habitat for animals, those kinds of things, or if it's somebody who really wants to maximize timber production in a sustainable way, their definitions of what a healthy forest looks like might be a little bit different. So while there are lots of different definitions of forest health and what a healthy forest is, they all tend to take into account factors like age, structure, the composition of different trees and species, how vigorous those species are, and resilience to disturbances. So when something bad happens, how can that community recover? And then typically when we talk about forest health, what we're talking about are those threats. So we're talking about insects and diseases, invasive plants, fire, drought, those kinds of things that can really jeopardize the health of forests, as well as what we can do to manage those things and to improve the health of those areas.
So what I'm hearing from the both of you is that there's invasive plants and invasive insects. Is that correct?
Invasive plants, insects, and pathogens, so diseases, as well as animals. So there are a lot of different invasive species. And when we talk about invasive species, they're another kind of slippery term, but invasive tends to refer to a non-native organism. That is, it's from somewhere else and it's been introduced here either accidentally or we brought it in here because at some point we thought it was a good idea and then learned otherwise. And they have spread rapidly and are causing damage. And that's where there's some subjectivity. So we wouldn't call something invasive if we liked what it was doing. But if it's causing economic damage, so it's competing with things that we do care about and want, if it's hurting native species, other plants, insects, animals, if it's causing problems in some way, then that's part of what makes something invasive.
They're harming our forests and trees. And so what are our major invasive insects? What are they? What are they out there? Who, you know, what's their names and what should we be looking for?
Yeah, so as Ella mentioned, just talking about some of the differences between our native and non-native insects, our big issues right now that we're dealing with are our non-native species. So again, these are species that have come from oftentimes different parts of the world. So the big name one that we're dealing with right now is emerald ash borer. And anyone who has an ash tree in their front yard or maybe in their woods and lives in the central or north central part of the state is probably familiar with this insect, unfortunately, because their tree is either in decline or it's probably dead at this point. So the emerald ash borer again is really our major invasive insect that we're dealing with at this point.
So does the emerald ash borer only kill ash trees?
Yes. So the majority or all of the research has shown that it has been in ash trees. Just within the last few years, they have found that it has also impacted white fringe tree, which is in the same family as ash. But this is more of a coastal species that it's not going to be common in the woods of Kentucky. You might see it planted around maybe in an arboretum in someone's front yard, but it's not a component of our woods. So as far as when we're working with our woodland owners, it's our ash species that we're really concerned with. But thankfully, that's all it is. It's not jumping into anything else like oak or hickory or something like that.
Right. So how did EAB get here in the first place?
Yeah, so it was first found in Michigan back in the early 2000s. And they believe that it was brought over from Asia in packing material, so accidentally introduced. And what happened is that during that time period in the early 2000s, they were seeing a lot of the ash trees in that part of Michigan start to die, and they didn't really know what was going on. So there was a lot of early research trying to figure out what might be the cause, if it was weather related or maybe something disease related. And eventually, after enough work, they found out that there was an insect that kept popping up with a lot of the dead trees that they were seeing. So the problem was that no one had seen this insect before here in the United States. So after some digging, they found out that this was actually a non-native insect that was from Asia. So that's where it first popped up. And since that time, unfortunately, the insect has spread throughout much of the eastern United States, with Kentucky being one of those places.
So if someone sees it, should they report it to somebody or someplace?
So as I mentioned earlier, part of my job is monitoring for these different forest health threats we have and where the trees are dying. So at this point, we have a good grasp of where the ash trees are dying in central and eastern Kentucky. At this point, we have not found the emerald ash borer in western Kentucky. So if someone on that part of the state would see something, we are certainly interested in getting out there and confirming that it is the emerald ash borer, so that we can let our landowners know as soon as possible that that insect is in their area, and then that way they can implement the management plans necessary to deal with it.
You've been listening to From the Woods, Kentucky with co-hosts Renee and Laura. We'll be right back after this short break.
So today for Wildlife Sounds of the Forest, we're going to get into this sound. And talk about why this animal is making this sound, what animal is making this sound, and how other sounds from other animals relate to this kind of behavior.
Welcome back to From the Woods, Kentucky. Today's show topic is on forest health issues, and we are learning on why a lot of those ash trees in Lexington are dying. So let's continue on that discussion. So from my understanding, the emerald ash borer actually will leave a D-shaped hole in a tree. So that's how you can kind of know if you have them. Is that right?
Yeah. So one of the good things about the internet and technology that we're dealing with today, there are just a ton of resources online to deal with this. So emeraldashborer.info, the website, has a lot of great information that you can find with this insect. But online, you can search EAB. Exit hole, and you can see the pictures come up online, and it's a D-shaped exit hole. It's relatively small, but it forms almost a perfect D shape, and you're going to see that as the insect, the adult, chews its way out of the bark of the ash trees, it leaves this very distinctive D-shaped hole, and that's one of the tools that we use to confirm that the ash borer has infested a tree.
Okay, great. So what are some of the other forest health threats that you deal with, and what should we be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so the other big name exotic insect or non-native insect that we're dealing with in the state is the hemlock woolly adelgid. And this is a pest insect of hemlock trees. So as far as the diverse forest that we have here in Kentucky, hemlocks are mainly found in the eastern third of the state. So this is really the main focus of where we're dealing with this insect pest. This is, again, another non-native insect. So our trees don't have any defense mechanisms with this insect. So this is one that our managers in the eastern part of the state are working again with landowners. There are some management options, some chemical options to keep those trees alive that you can apply insecticide to kill the adelgid insect. But those are two big name non-native insects. And again, what's interesting here that we see that we're dealing with here in the U.S. are kind of two groups of threats. One are native and one are non-native. So our big issue ones are non-native. And the reason for that, as I mentioned a little bit before, is that our trees don't have the defense mechanisms to deal with these non-native insects. So besides that, we do have some native things that pop up every year, but the good news with those is that they usually aren't anything that are killing trees. They can do a little bit of damage here and there, but typically they aren't going to be anything major that we're worried about kind of wiping through or killing trees very quickly. So to answer your question in regards to the native species, we see a couple native defoliators or a couple insects that feed. One is yellow poplar weevil, which is an insect pest of yellow poplar that had a good outbreak this year in eastern Kentucky. We had one a few years ago.
I saw it all around Lexington this year, too, in the landscape trees. If you had yellow poplar that had little rice-shaped holes in the leaves, all summer, basically, at different times, it was causing damage on leaves in the city as well as in eastern Kentucky and rural areas.
Yeah, exactly. It kicked off in about sometime in the early June, and we've been seeing damage through the beginning of July. The good thing with this being a native insect is that our trees are used to these kind of cyclical outbreaks, and they've got the defenses in place. So I've actually seen in eastern Kentucky from recent scouting that most of the yellow poplar have put out new growth, and they're looking pretty good. So again, this isn't something that we're overly concerned about, but it's something that I commonly get phone calls about as landowners are worried when their trees start to turn brown from some of these insects feeding on them.
Definitely. And I think that kind of draws to the point of a lot of times I think people hear about these doom and gloom situations with these insects, and especially us on the forest health side of things, it's a lot of negative, you know, this insect, this disease, these problems, but the vast majority of our native insects, they're going to cause some minor issues. They might be major to you. You might see them and think, oh wow, this is serious, but it's not going to necessarily negatively affect that tree, hurt it in the long term. The reason we care about these invasives is that since the trees don't have defenses to them, they can just be killed by them rapidly. And unlike many things that I think people are tempted to say, well, it's natural, it'll fix itself, invasive species just have decimated some species from our forests. So, you know, the American chestnut is a good example of something that we used to have a lot of, and you really can't find any more chestnut trees. You might see some shrubs that are sprouting up from the roots because of an invasive fungus that killed them off a long time ago. And so when we talk about these invasives, we want to avoid that happening in the future as best as possible. We want to prevent new things from being introduced. We want to stop spreading them around if they're already here. And we want to find strategies to minimize their negative impact whenever we can. So there's a lot of exciting research ongoing here at UK and elsewhere about how we can do that with regard to emerald ash borer and other invasive species.
Yeah, I think exactly. That's a great point, because we're dealing with a lot of these invasive and non-native species right now, but a lot of the research is going into, well, what might be coming next to our forest? Because unfortunately, with the one of the negative side effects of all the global trade we have is that we're accidentally moving a lot of things around. So it seems like it's just a matter of time until maybe the next insect or disease is going to pop up. So a lot of the research that is going on is looking into what these new things might be. But then also it's looking at the insects and diseases that are already here in the United States, but may not be actually here yet in Kentucky. So we have a couple examples of those. The two big name non-native diseases or insects are Asian longhorn beetle and thousand cankers disease. So the first one, Asian longhorn beetle, is an insect pest mainly of maple, but it'll hit a few other species. And right now, this one is of concern for us in Kentucky because it's found right across the border of us in Ohio, so right across the Ohio River, just east of the Cincinnati area. Right now, they have a federal quarantine in place where they're working to keep that insect there. But it is one that is on our radar that we do survey and monitor for, because with it being a non-native species, if it does get out, it has the potential to kill trees and kill them rather quickly. So that's one that we're keeping an eye on. Another one is thousand cankers disease, which impacts walnut trees, which is of great importance here in Kentucky since we are such a high producer of walnut material. This is an insect and disease complex. Thankfully, it has kind of gone down, I guess, on the level of worry for our landowners and for our researchers. We have found it popping up here in the eastern United States a few years ago, but since that time, we're not really seeing it spread much anymore. It is something that we're still keeping our eyes on. But hopefully it's something we won't have to deal with here in Kentucky. But again, it's something to be on the look for.
Yeah, and I think another one is a gypsy moth would be an example of how, you know, there are all of these insects with the potential to be invasive and invasive insects that we want to keep out. But there are some examples of where an organized effort has really helped to slow the spread of some of those. And so gypsy moth would be a good example. And is your group's involved in some of that as well, right?
Yes, and also groups here from the University of Kentucky, the Department of Entomology, the Office of the State Entomologist, they are the ones that lead the trapping effort for gypsy moth. And as Ellen mentioned, one of the programs that they do is Slow the Spread program. And that's where they're putting out thousands of traps across Kentucky each year, looking, kind of monitoring to see if this moth is popping up in Kentucky at all. And then also, if they do see it, they go in and put in eradication efforts to make sure that they can control that population before it gets established. So they do find it in the state almost every year. They'll find a few moth species, but they're not established populations. So the established populations are neighboring us in West Virginia and Ohio. And they're projecting that it's slowly going to work its way into Kentucky. But they're talking that, you know, 10, 20 years from now, without this program, we would have had this insect in the state of Kentucky decades ago. So we're thankful that this is a program that has been in place. And gypsy moth is really of major concern because it's one of its major host species is oak. So with the forests that we have here in Kentucky, a lot of them being oak hickory dominated, gypsy moth is one that we're worried about. But this Slow the Spread program has really been a great example of how we can get many agencies and collaborators working together to work with invasive species.
And I think it's important to emphasize that something like that, you may think, oh, slow the spread is still going to get here, it's going to cause the same damage. While that's happening, there's all sorts of other efforts that are ongoing to try to minimize the damage that it's going to have once it gets here. So it's really those years, that time that we're being bought is really valuable.
So great. Well, thank you guys for explaining some of the issues that we have here related to forest health. Now, I know here at UK, you know, for some of our students that are listening that might be interested in these topics, we do have a couple courses on these topics. Can you tell a little bit about those too?
Sure, definitely. So one of the courses is Forest Health and Protection, and that will be taught next spring. And it's kind of a whirlwind tour of everything forest health related. A lot of hands-on experience, as well as talking to professionals who work in some aspect of forest health. And that's a great opportunity. There's also forest entomology happening this fall. That is another wonderful introduction to this really important group of not just forest threats, but also really important components of our forest ecosystem that can be beneficial as well as negative, taught by Dr. Lynn Riske-Kenney. So forest health in the spring and forest health in the fall. Those are some good options.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then I know some of our students that might be interested in research, whether they're undergraduate students wanting to do research or graduate students, that might be an opportunity for them as well.
Yeah, in addition, I have to plug, we have a brand new citizen science app called TreeSnap that the Forest Health Research and Education Center and myself and some collaborators all around the United States, including the University of Tennessee, have developed to better connect scientists who are working in restoration-related forest health. So people like the American Chestnut Foundation, who are trying to restore American chestnuts, the Hemlock Restoration Initiative, the Forest Restoration Alliance, two members of the public. So trying to help them be able to contribute data about where are these tree species, can they sample them and collect information for scientists? So if you're interested at all, please download TreeSnap and give it a whirl and maybe observe a few trees and share them with scientists.
Okay. That's great. Sounds like a great opportunity for them.
All right. You both have presented us with a great abundance of information, and we really appreciate that. So what would be a takeaway point that you would want our listeners to grasp onto?
So I guess my two takeaways that I have, first, that forests and trees are a huge asset for Kentucky. We benefit in so many different ways from forests, whether it's financially through timber or through trees and cities, making us happier and healthier. And Kentucky is a great place for trees to grow. We are fortunate to have a diversity of different species and abundance of trees, but there are some really major threats out there that have the ability to hurt our forests. And these are things that we introduce. They're not a natural part of these forests. And if we want healthy, productive trees and forests, if we want sustainable woodlands and forests, we can do more to help manage these, to fight the invasive species, and to make our forests more vibrant.
Yes. So for me, I guess my final takeaway would be, and we touched just very briefly on a number of the invasive plants, insects, and diseases that we deal with here in Kentucky. And at first glance, if it's not something you're very familiar with, it can be very overwhelming. So I just want to mention that there are a lot of great resources out there, especially online, where any of the diseases or insects that we mentioned today, there are websites dedicated with how you ID, what the management is, or if you just want to learn a little bit more information. So I always suggest people to get online and to take dig a little bit deeper if it's something they are interested in. A great resource is here with the Department of Forestry. They have a lot of resources there that can get you, again, a little bit more detail on what the diseases and insects that we're dealing with. And then lastly, you know, for any of our landowners out there that would be listening to this, you have a lot of resources also. So your local UK Extension offices are great places to start if you have questions about this. Then I also say we have, within the Division of Forestry, five regional offices, and we have foresters that represent each county in the state. So if you do have some woods on your property, I'd highly suggest looking into getting a management plan. Forest health is a major component of those management plans, and they will address a lot of the issues that we're talking about today.
Great. Well, we appreciate both of you all coming in. We really do, and giving us some information and background on forest health. If you would like more information about forest health, there will be links posted on our website, which is www.fromthewoodsky.org.
We have two of our UK undergraduate students, Hannah Hollowell and Sarah Hayes. Hannah is a senior at UK, double majoring in the forestry program and natural resources and environmental science. And then we also have Sarah, and she's a senior at UK, majoring in forestry. So welcome to the show today. It's great to have both of you here. Both Hannah and Sarah have been working with Ellen conducting research on forest health issues this summer. And before we get into the research project that you've been working on this summer, tell us a little bit about how you became interested in forestry and natural resources. Hannah, do you want to tell us how you got started?
Sure. So I've always been really interested in the outdoors and just natural resources. And I think trying to find a field of study where I can work to protect that and conserve those resources is kind of important to me. So.
Yeah, great. And Sarah, how about you? What got you started into forestry?
I grew up in a family of outdoors people, and I've always loved being out in the woods. And I really love the idea of, you know, being able to walk through the woods and kind of know and identify everything around me. So I get to do that with forestry, and I really love it.
That's great. So what would you say has been one of your favorite things about your major so far?
Definitely the hands-on aspect. Like, we get a lot of field experience. Just learning, like what Sarah was saying with tree ID and things like that. Just getting a chance to be outside in the field and understanding how it all works.
Okay. And I know you guys recently finished up the spring field semester that you had in your junior year. How did that go for you?
Oh, that was so much fun, and we learned so much. I feel like we learned more in those few months probably than in the years leading up to it.
Yeah. Can you tell them a little bit about the spring field semester, how it's set up? And
so we spend our whole spring semester of our junior year out in the field in different areas like Berea. We spent 8 weeks, 6 weeks?
6 weeks, I think, in Robinson Forest.
At Robinson Forest, out in eastern Kentucky. And it gave us a chance just to see different ecosystems and how we can apply the things we've been learning to timber management and wildlife management and things like that.
So. Yeah. Great.
We also got to travel to places like North Carolina and Georgia and see kind of a whole different landscape, which was really interesting.
Good. No, that's great. That sounds like a great experience. And so this summer you've been working on some research with Ellen Crocker doing some forest health issues. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the research project that you have for that?
Sure.
Sarah, you want to start?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So I've been working with Ellen on a few different projects. We're looking at a disease that is affecting bush honeysuckle in the area. So I've been doing some research on that, and it's kind of a preliminary investigation that will hopefully inform future projects, but that's been really interesting.
Good. And how about you?
I've been working with Dr. Crocker and Dr. Risky Kinney on a project looking at Colitotricum, which is a fungus that infects certain Chinese chestnut galls. And so we've been looking at how this fungus affects insects that develop on Chinese chestnut. And it's kind of more of a continuation of a project that was done previously, and then also informs the public, especially chestnut growers, about the health of their trees.
And do you know what you plan to do with the results from your research this summer?
Hopefully we'll be publishing that for chestnut growers, so they can be using that information to inform how they grow their trees and just how they can maintain the health of their chestnuts.
Oh, great. Well, thank you guys both for coming in today. We appreciate you telling us about your research projects and a little bit about the major that you've been working on. And we wish you all the best in your senior year, your last year here at UK. So good luck with that. But thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're on to our segment for Wildlife Sounds from the Forest. And today in studio, we have with us Dr. Matt Springer, and he's an assistant extension professor of wildlife management here in the Department of Forestry and Natural Resources at the University of Kentucky. So let's hear that sound one more time that we heard at the beginning of the show. And we'll play it for you one more time, just so you heard it. Okay, so Matt, tell us what's making the sound and why.
Sure. So if you're hearing this sound, you may be in trouble, because this is actually a black bear making an aggressive noise that feels threatened or is trying to threaten you because of any given situation. Usually you may hear this with, like, if you get between mom and her cubs, or if you corner a bear. So this is not a good noise for you if you're hearing it outside of this program.
Okay. And tell us where in Kentucky we have bears. Where?
Sure. So we have a recovering bear population. It's growing slowly but surely. And it's mostly in southeastern Kentucky, down into the Daniel Boone, in the southern part of Daniel Boone, and then stretches all the way up as far as we get some bears that are up in Lewis County area-ish in northern eastern Kentucky. So it's a growing population.
Okay.
So other animals have aggression fighting noises as well?
So yeah, so the theme today is aggression and fighting. So we have a bunch of different ways that animals do that. And a lot of times what they're doing is either trying to avoid a fight, saying I'm bigger and badder than you, or it's noises that you may hear when animals do get into a fight. So we have a prime example of one that if you're in Kentucky, because we have so many of them, is a white-tailed deer in the fall, the bucks, when they're rutting, do get into fights. And even though they try to avoid it, it happens. And it sounds like this. And that's basically their antlers that they grow. They're using them to fight out. And really, most of the times when animals fight, they're trying to figure out where their hierarchy is in the social system.
So Matt, tell us, why are these animals fighting?
Sure. So for many of the same reasons we fight, right? So it's usually over resources. Whether that be food, cover, or mates. So in this case, where we just heard those white-tailed deer fighting, it's really over mates. But other animals do get into fights over other things. Another example for mating be the turkeys. You know, turkeys gobble. We kind of covered that in one of the previous shows about advertising. Well, what happens when you have two turkeys gobbling in the same place? Well, they have to figure out who's the bigger, badder turkey. So you get some kind of situations that sound like this. And those are two gobblers that are actually fighting to set up a social hierarchy to know who's the biggest, baddest turkey in the area.
Okay. So you'd also mentioned, like, raccoons do this as well?
Yeah. So a lot of times with raccoons, they have a social hierarchy as well, but they'll fight a lot over resources like food. So we have a lot of hunters feed deer where folks that aren't hunters feed deer put corn piles out. Well, you can have raccoons coming into the corn because they love corn too, and they'll actually get into fights over who gets the most food or who gets the best food. And it's a common noise you'll hear when if you live in the country, even in a city at night, you'll hear raccoons fighting each other, and it's a rather loud noise, and it sounds like this. Yeah, it can be alarming to those who don't know what it is because it's somewhat scary.
Some of those noises did sound pretty scary. It's just them being defensive of where their territory is or what their food source is, or do they fight over other things, or is that basically
Those are the major ones.
Major things.
Yeah, so and a lot of times there's situations where fighting happens more often, so we're a big proponent of not relocating animals because a lot of times when you're relocating animals, not only do you take the diseases they may have with them and when you let them go, but there's these social hierarchies in place. So when you let an animal go, like a raccoon in a new area, they're immediately going to start figuring out that social hierarchy and start fighting those animals to figure that out. Those that were living there now have a new one that comes in and it starts over.
So is there a specific time of year that it's worse?
So for certain animals in mating season, so white-tailed deer, the rut is in November. So October, November for them. For elk, we've talked about is September. So that's when they're really trying to find mates. Other animals, like the example of raccoons, it could be any time.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in today. We appreciate you being on our segment for Wildlife Sounds from the Forest.
Glad to be here.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.